interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McLean on today's News Talk, TNT.
This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk. For Brian McLean, I'm Timothy Shea. We are coming to you live from Central New York and Central Texas. Check us out live on the web at tntradio.live. Brian, I'd be remiss if I didn't wish my elder brothers and sisters in faith Chag Pesach Sameach, happy Passover. Tonight's the first night of Passover, that amazing biblical story that took place so many thousands of years ago. The doom scroll this weekend was just absolutely relentless, and putting together tonight's show was pretty challenging, not for finding things to talk about, but for weeding through and paring down all the stories. So we've already talked about the cold storage chemical plant in Findlay, Washington catching fire. We've talked about Judge Engoron slapping down Tish James's attempt to get the bond company tossed from the case in Manhattan, where she is persecuting Trump. There's been some sad news, too. In Idaho, a 27-year-old sheriff's deputy was murdered during a traffic stop. We had a county sheriff's deputy and a Syracuse police officer killed, not during a traffic stop, but following a traffic stop here just a week ago Sunday. Also in New York State, we're now redefining the legal definition of tenant to combat squatting. So at least the state government is doing something to harness or to limit the ability of squatters to use tenant law against landlords. There was also a story that this just couldn't get any worse. Ilhan Omar's daughter, or is it her sister, was whining about losing privileges at her $90,000 Barnard College, which is affiliated with Columbia University, after she was arrested at Columbia's Jew Hatred Palooza. And then Ilhan Omar comes out and exacerbates the situation by trying to say that her daughter did nothing wrong and supporting her daughter. She just made it all the worse. It was, you know, from bad to worse there in that story.
So Jew Hatred Palooza, is that what we call a protest against a genocide these days?
Yes, when you line up on the steps and keep people from going to class, just like the Nazis did at Berlin University, yes, Jew Hatred Palooza. Now, corrupt Judge Merchan did
I noticed that on Fox News, too. They're really leaning into that. But I don't know. It looks like propaganda to me. I see a lot of
propaganda when you're lining the steps and preventing people from entering a building. This wasn't just a protest. A protest is fine. But when you actively interfere with people's ability to get an education, when you're violently attacking people because they're wearing kippahs, no.
There were violent attacks, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, there were violent attacks over the weekend. Mm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And corrupt Judge Merchan, Brian, is shut down the trial today. He shut it down early because a juror had a dental appointment. But Donald Trump attending Barron's graduation. No, we must not permit that. Court must go on, graduation or no graduation. But a dental appointment, Brian, priorities, right?
Yeah, priorities. That's really interesting how that one works. So I guess I hope it wasn't a hot tooth. My goodness. Well, what a bummer.
Yeah, right. I think it was just a normal denture fitting, probably. Who knows what it was? A very significant story that's flying under the radar everywhere. Colorado's governor has quietly signed Tiara's Law, HB 1071, named after a drag queen named Tiara, that makes it easier for felons to obtain a new identity. You see, Tiara was a sex worker in Florida and got three convictions. And in Florida, when you get three misdemeanor convictions, it's elevated to a felony. And so now Tiara says that a felony follows her. And every time she hears that name that she no longer identifies with, it's like a punch in the gut. And she needs a new identity. Well, all this is a criminal wash and rinse strategy, Brian. Step number one, move to Colorado. Step number two, change your name to a trans identity. Step number three, obtain all new identity papers. And step number four, detransition and change all identity papers to your new name. Lather, rinse, repeat. I guarantee this is going to be abused.
Yeah, absolutely. We're well beyond abuse at this point. We've got men being populated in women's prison, making million-dollar babies with them. There's all kind of grifts and violence and sexual abuse happening, schools, prisons, all over the nation now because of this protected class status.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about predictive programming a lot on the show, and it looks like even Ghostbusters was predictive programming, Brian, because
remember the great
scene where Bill Murray's trying to describe the severity of the ghost attack to the mayor and trying to get additional resources. One of the lines was dogs and cats living together, human sacrifice, mass hysteria. Well, mass hysteria or not, we've got fourth graders, Brian, that are being taught that dogs can identify as cats. In a cartoon lesson, there's a dog, and he identifies as a cat. He licks his paws and like says he likes to play with yarn. And this trans ideology's just got to go.
Yeah, well, you probably saw last week in Utah, we had students walking out of a middle school because the teachers were protecting other students that were biting them, scratching them, spraying them with Febreze because they identify as these sort of things. So it's really, it's gone beyond reaching ahead. We're just living in it now.
Well, you know, I'm a dog lover, but sometimes a dog needs a quick pop in the snout. That's my Perhaps. Suggestion anyway. Do you have a suggestion? Do you have a possible guest you'd like to hear on TNT? Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT website. Help us make a difference on today's news talk, TNT.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's news talk radio, TNT.
Having failed miserably at educating San Diegan children, the San Diego United School District has decided to try its hand at land development. It's approved its first affordable housing development on district property. Joining us now to discuss is realtor and former San Diego County Board of Education member, Mark Powell.
Hey, how are you guys?
Very good.
Doing well, Mark. You know, this is just crazy. If you want to build affordable housing, great. But why is the school district running this?
Well, the school district is going by a law that was passed in 2016 that allows districts now to build developments, housing developments on district-owned property that's declared in excess. That means that there's no actual use for the property anymore. For example, one of the school sites that they're using to build these affordable units on, it was so old, so dilapidated, rehabilitating the property would have been prohibited. But going into the business of being a landlord is what they're doing. My push was to build affordable housing for teachers that they were allowed to purchase because they make about $78,000 a year average salary here in San Diego. But the median price home is $850,000. So this is caused by failed leadership at our elected levels. The housing prices have escalated so much. A teacher now has to take on additional job, two or three jobs. They have to travel multiple miles to get to the school site. When they get there, they're tired, they're stressed out, they're working a job as a waitress or a bartender or whatever they choose, and that just impacts student learning. And this is where we're seeing this big problem here. We're having students, we're graduating students here that can't even read, write, or do math at basic levels. It's called social promotion. So not only do we have teachers that are stressed out because they can't even afford to live in the city that they work in, we have students that are non-performing. And think about this, guys. The San Diego Unified School District has a $1.4 billion a year budget. That's with a B, billion-dollar a year budget. And with all of that money and all of these resources, instead of focusing on what they should be focusing on is educating students, they are going to become landlords. Not a bad idea for helping teachers that are struggling, but we need to get that focus back on the students and back in the classroom, get them working on the trades again. Do you remember when we used to have trades? Do you remember wood shop, metal shop, electric shop?
Yeah. I have no problem with reusing school district property that isn't being effectively used by the schools anymore. That's great. But the school district doesn't own that property. The city government does. And at least that's the way it is in New York. Maybe in California, the school district does own the property. I just think it would be much more economically efficient if the property were sold to a private developer or somehow folded into the housing department, because the city's already a landlord.
Well, this is a much larger problem. The picture that you're seeing here is they're going to build 327 units of affordable housing when the state of California has even said to San Diego, we're 90,000 units short of where we should be. So what developers are doing is they're building apartments. They're not building homes that people can buy. If you can't buy a home, you can never have generational wealth. You can't really move up the ladder. Most people get generational wealth through real estate. Many billionaires made all their money through real estate. But by building just apartments, thousands and thousands of apartments, what we're doing is we're trapping people. We're trapping people to being lifelong renters instead of property owners. So my recommendation was, hey, if you're going to build some affordable housing units, great, but you should sell some. Let people be able to enjoy the American dream of home ownership, which is not a dream here in San Diego because the prices are just way too high. They're out of control because of regulations, because of government interference, misguided leadership, poor decision-making. You know, we can just go down the list.
Yeah, well, they are a dream. Unfortunately, they're a subsection of dreams called nightmares right now. Those prices are absolutely ridiculous. Now, Mark, what do they mean? We got a couple minutes left, but what do they mean when they say affordable housing, and who is eligible for it?
Anyone is eligible for it. However, they're going to give the school district employees and teachers first priority. And note that there's 13,000 school district employees. So they're probably going to get a percentage of the homes. But they really want to have families in there. They built 4-bedroom, 3-bedroom, 2-bedroom, 1-bedroom. But just picture this scenario, okay? What's going to happen when one of these families who moves in with their 3 or 4 kids and they stop paying the rent? What's going to happen? Do you think the school district is going to evict them? Can you imagine the optics on that? Because they're the landlords. They own the property. This is going to be a setup for disaster. So the direction that I think we're heading just globally is housing to be a human right, not a privilege anymore, but they want to make it a human right. And when it's a human right, guess what? You can't take it away. So if you can't pay your mortgage payment, you don't get evicted. You stay in that house. So we have to be very careful and protect our private property rights. That's the foundation of our government. In this country, we're allowed to own property, and we're allowed to rent that property and also capture the money from the rent, not just have somebody squatting in it for a year or two, not have somebody not paying their mortgage payment or the rent payment, and then just saying, I'm not leaving. And that happens all the time, daily here in San Diego and across the nation as well. All the other states are facing the same problem.
Mark, can't thank you enough. You're uniquely positioned to provide us with this expert analysis, being both a realtor and a former school board member. it just one more thing coming out of California. It's almost as if the governments of California got together and said, hey, you know what? It'd be great if we showed the rest of the country how government can really screw up everyday Americans' lives.
Absolutely. You know, they're working on a good thing. But the unintended consequences, I don't think, were really thought out. We'll see how this all pans out in the next 3 or 4 years.
That's the thing. I think the motivation is great. I think we need to have more affordable housing, especially for our teachers. But you're right. The devil's always in the details. Mark, thanks so much. Can't wait to have you back on State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
Sonia Poulton.
If the British courts take the USA's poor application seriously and extradite Julian Assange, they will almost certainly have blood on their hands. Those are my words, not Stella's, although I know she thinks the same. She said so. The court has refused to address the very credible evidence that the CIA planned to kidnap and assassinate Julian Assange. We should all remember this moment the next time the UK or the USA dare to claim we are a free society while lecturing other countries about their lack of press freedoms. Julian Assange has been denied his freedom for 15 years. The entire process has been his punishment.
Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Are we on the air?
Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
On the air 24/7. Your news talk giant, TNT.
Our next guest co-founded Voters Organized for Trusted Election Results in Georgia, Voter GA. He's also a career information technology professional with over 40 years of in-depth experience and now over 17 years of volunteer research into electronic voting machines. So he is absolutely a subject matter expert in all the things we're about to talk about. He's a returning guest. He's a friend of ours. Garland Favrito, welcome back to State of the Nation. It's great to see you, my friend.
Hello, Brian. Always good to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, absolutely. Timothy and I have been looking forward to speaking with you. Now, we want to talk to you about election integrity because, Garland, we're almost all the way through April. This year is flying by. It's going to be November before we know it. And a lot of Americans are concerned. I know a lot of people in Georgia are concerned after everything that's happened up to this point and everything that is happening. So what's the latest you're hearing?
Well, the latest down here, Brian, is that we had a really good legislative session. And I think we've wrapped this up since the last time I was on the show. I'm trying to remember. But just to give you a few examples of things that the legislature has passed, we're going to have visible watermarks on ballot paper now, security paper for the 2024 election. All of the ballots prior to election day will be tabulated on election night. And by 8 o'clock, so we won't be counting ballots for 3 days after the election, like happened last time in Georgia and so many other states. We've got all ballots will now be public record. They'll be open records requests. So that's another one. We've got an improved chain of custody on the sign-off and sealing procedures. We've gotten better access for poll workers and poll watchers to see and hear all elections processes. And we also are banning the QR codes on the voting systems. That won't take place for 2024, but there will no longer, we're going to outlaw, in fact, we'll be outlawing the QR code, the unverifiable QR code that has the votes in it that the voters cannot see or verify. So those are a few of the features. I think I probably have forgotten one or two of the features that got passed in the legislature. They're all election workers will have to be U.S. citizens now, just like the voters. So that's another good one. We banned foreign money from the process. We had banned private money before, but now we've banned foreign money. So those are some of the good things. The only thing that can prevent all these things from coming into law is a veto by the governor. And we don't think that he'll veto these provisions because we worked really hard on them, and his staff was involved in that. So those are, some good news, actually. Usually when I'm on the show, I'm bringing bearer of bad tidings, but this time it makes me feel good to actually tell you something that's positive from what's going on here in Georgia.
Well, it is good to hear positive news. Just last hour, we had Katie Gorka on, and she's also positive in urging people to get involved locally, be a poll watcher, be an election judge, get involved in the process. I have to note, though, Josh Dunlap today tweeted out that breaking voter GA's Garland Favorito going over his audit of the Fulton County election in the disbarment trial of Trump's former DOJ official, Jeffrey Clark, says they found 200,000 duplicate scanned 2020 ballots, but ongoing research has bumped that number up to 375K. And that tweet references another tweet by Philip Schuyler that says, if you think the cheating was only in 5 or 6 states, consider this. According to Judicial Watch, 353 counties in 29 different states had voter registration exceeding 100%. This was not an election. It was a coup disguised as an election. What's the situation with cleaning up the voter rolls?
Well, we did. Thank you for asking that question, Timothy. We did get a few improvements and clarifications on the voter rolls. There's a list of things that mostly clarifications on, and a lot of them were already law, but we made it more explicit so that the counties would have to follow the law and can't get around it. You know, a lot of them are being intimidated by groups like, you know, law firms from out of state, and they're trying to avoid cleaning their voter rolls. We still have more work to do on that. We want to put a penalty on the counties if they are presented with the evidence of invalid voter roll records and they still keep them on. But there is some pretty good news there. We're that's going to be more explicit. And then I just wanted to mention there's probably a little bit of inaccuracy there on, I think the numbers refer to something different. I think when I testified at Jeff Clark's case, I think I said that there were 200,000 ballots which were added after the election. And this was after Secretary Ramsberger went on TV, NBC Today interview, day after the election. He said 4.7 million votes had been certified, votes had been cast, and then actually ended up certifying another 200,000, which we still don't know where they came from. And I think the 300,000 number, that was the total number of missing chain of custody forms for surveillance video that had been destroyed. I think that's what that was an estimated 350,000 missing chain of custody forms for ballot drop boxes. So in other words, we don't have chain of custody forms for over 355,000 ballots. I believe that's what the figures were. I think the numbers were actually referring to something else, but I appreciate the opportunity to clarify that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And with regards to chain of custody, that particular one was a chain of custody failure that you're describing. Will the new rules about chain of custody help mitigate that problem?
They should. Well, first of all, we won't be having drop boxes. So we've already outlawed all drop boxes except for drop boxes that are in the precincts, no more outdoor drop boxes, no more people dropping ballots off in the middle of the night and that kind of thing. We won't have that here in Georgia. That's good. Now, what's interesting about these new chain of custody procedures is that Secretary of State's office fought against these, implementing these for the 2024 election, even though they had no dog in the hunt. The chain of custody has to be performed by the counties, and they didn't even object to it. They had originally objected to it a few years ago, but because the provisions had been vetted so well over the last few years, there was no further objection to the counties. So we're going to ask the counties to go ahead and implement those for 2024, and hopefully a lot of them will. It's not that big of a deal.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, I want to ask you a little bit to expand on the watermarks, but I have to take a headline really quick here. So when we come back, we'll talk about the watermarks on some of the ballots and some of the other documents and see what you think about that and how that could help further bolster election integrity there in Georgia. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
We have some wonderful news for you.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan is conducting an investigation into a deadly federal law enforcement raid on the home of Brian Malinowski, the airport director of Bill and Hillary Clinton National Airport in Little Rock, Arkansas. Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov warned that the U.S. and its Western allies could provoke a catastrophic war between nuclear powers through their confrontational stance toward Russia and undermining of arms control agreements.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, Garland, now we saw a lot of skullduggery, what appeared to be skullduggery in the past when it came to voting ballots. A lot of the papers were the wrong sizes in some places, a lot of dubious submissions. How do the watermarks play into this for Georgia?
Well, in Georgia, like some of the other states, was victimized by ballot trafficking and ballot box stuffing and ballot counterfeiting. So one of the things that I think is an improvement is the ballot security paper. The ballot security paper became law in 2021, but the problem was that you had to have an ultraviolet light to see the micron printing and whatever else was on the ballot. And so the elections officials had no way to detect a counterfeit ballot. So what they've decided to do now with this new law is to make, in addition to the previous security paper, they're going to add visible watermarks. So what that does is it lets the elections officials be able to immediately identify a counterfeit ballot rather than to try to hope for them to have an ultraviolet light in their hands to do it. So I think that will be an improvement as well.
Garland, I'm very concerned that all of these measures are going to put a lot of people out of business. What do you mean you can't have people dropping off ballots in the middle of the night? How are these people supposed to get paid?
Well, I think they'll have to have an honest living, Tim.
How about that? Speaking of an honest living, how come we don't have a governor and a secretary of state making an honest living? These men are putatively Republicans. Why are they pushing against all of the election security measures? Why are they pushing so hard to keep the elections down in Georgia vulnerable to shenanigans?
Well, I think it's obvious that maybe they're answering to some other organization or individual other than the voters, the constituents. We are hopeful, again, this time that the governor is going to sign this, if not sign the bills, just allow them to go into law. He can do that without even signing them. So that would certainly be an improvement. But if he was to veto them, that would be an incredible signal to every voter in Georgia that there is something not only wrong with the Secretary of State, but also with the governor.
Yeah, kind of like Mike Johnson getting that bill passed last week for Ukraine and everybody flying a Ukraine, waving a little Ukraine flag on the floor of the House of Representatives.
Yeah, I guess you could draw that analogy. Huh?
And what about, let's shift to the cybersecurity factor for a moment here. We've discussed a lot of holes in the system, a lot of threat vectors from Dominion and people outside the country even. Is there anything you can give us an update on with regards to the cybersecurity posture of the machines involved?
Thank you, Brian. So I'm trying to remember if we discussed this on your show or not, but the last time, but the Curlin v. Raffensperger case, I think I may have mentioned on your show before. Yep. No one is responsible in the Secretary of State's office for cybersecurity. And it was absolutely bizarre when we had the trial and the Curlin v. Raffensperger case, which, by the way, we're still waiting for a decision on that. But at that trial, we asked the chief operating officer who was responsible for cybersecurity for the elections. And he said, oh, that would be the deputy director, Michael Barnes. And that's what Gabe Sterling told us. Michael Barnes, we asked him that who's responsible for cybersecurity. He said it was Merritt Beaver, the chief technology office. And we got Merritt Beaver on the stand and said, well, who's responsible for cybersecurity? He says, oh, it's actually under Gabriel Sterling's office. I'm not responsible for it. And by the way, we outsourced it to Dominion anyway. Which by the way, and that's not even possible because Dominion as a voting system company can only secure cybersecurity for their own application, not for the entire infrastructure of Secretary of State's office. So basically we had all this finger pointing going one way or the other. Nobody is responsible for cybersecurity for the 2024 election. And that is pretty disturbing for every voter in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, I'm just
we gotta go ahead, Brian.
No, I was just gonna say, you know, you and I have talked about cybersecurity in the past, and that just seems unacceptable. It doesn't seem like an oversight. It seems like a feature, not a bug.
There were gasps in the courtrooms when we made that whole circle come in. When it came full circle, people were gasping literally. My attorney said he could hear it behind us while he was asking the questions.
I'm laughing, but it's not funny.
Yeah, I was shocked when you just said it. I gasped here. We've got a few minutes left, Garland. One of the things I always rely on when I'm trying to determine how the political winds are blowing isn't talking to lawyers and lobbyists at a fundraiser, but talking to regular workaday folks, the guy at the auto repair shop, the waitress at the barbecue joint. What's the situation on the ground? What are you hearing? What's the zeitgeist like down in Georgia? Donald Trump's motorcade had turned into an amazing parade after his indictment down in Atlanta. We've got young black men calling him Uncle Trump. We've got young black women calling him Daddy Trump. It seems like everything the Democrats have done to poison him in the public's consciousness has just served to elevate it. What are you hearing on the ground in your daily conversations? What are people talking about down in Georgia?
Well, Tim, I think you're kind of on to something there. The more they have done to poison the well, and boy, they have done every conceivable thing they could possibly think of, it all seems to be backfiring. Donald Trump's support is growing with both the Black and the Latino communities. So that bodes well for him in the election. And there's a lot of people, Tim, that are really, really concerned. And they're seeing for the first time that this Marxist takeover attempt of America, and they are motivated to try to stop that. So you've got that. That's a groundswell that's still growing and probably is going to continue to grow all the way up until Election Day. So I would say that the momentum is certainly favoring him at this point in time.
Yeah, we're noticing that also. It's going to be a very interesting shape up into November here. Now, with regards to access for poll workers and better chain of custody, if something goes, if it doesn't feel right after this next election, is this going to make voter GA, some of these stipulations and procedures going to make voter GA's auditing a little bit easier, perhaps? I know you guys worked really hard.
Yeah, we did. We worked really hard to get this passed. And, every day, 7 days a week for all day. You mentioned the poll worker thing, poll watcher, actually. But, they in previous elections, and just literally the last one, they would stick the poll watchers over in a corner and say, okay, you can go sit in the chair and observe. And we've said, no, now we've got the law. The law says that the poll watcher has to be close enough to hear and see the process, observe the process that's going on, and they have to be involved in all processes, including the processing of the election absentee ballots, which has been one of the biggest vulnerabilities in the system. So we're really, really thrilled about that that law taking place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you should be. And thank you for that hard work. And thank you for sharing the process with us here at TNT. I mean, I think it really will inspire other people, you know, to do these things in their states. And you guys are setting the blueprint. VoterGA.org is the website where you can go keep up with Garland and his colleagues as they go through this very important process. Garland, there's a lot more work to be done. I hate to be the one to say it, but obviously there's a lot more work to be done. But congratulations and thank you again on everything that you guys have accomplished. So go ahead and leave us with a couple words before we have to let you go.
Well, you're absolutely right, Brian. There is more work to be done. We are still committed to unplugging Georgia from this voting system. We also, the audits are wholly inadequate, and we are wanting to do publicly recorded hand counts of the races. We are asking, our co-founder, Ricardo Davis, is asking the judge in the Curling v. Ravensburger case, Judge Schoenberg, to do that. We're expecting a ruling on probably, if not this month, early next month. So that's pretty exciting. You still could hear more good news coming from Georgia. And the last thing is, always, we always mention, we are volunteers and we don't get paid for this. So we have got to save Georgia, and hopefully we'll save the country this time in 2024. So VoterGA is going to keep working, VoterGA.org. And we appreciate the listeners that keep helping us out with the tax deductible donations.
All right. Yes, thank you very much. And we encourage you to do that. This is American Patriots at work right here. This is nonpartisan work, and it's very important. VoterGA.org is where you can go to get involved and make sure this fantastic work continues. Garland Favorito, thank you so much for joining us on State of the Nation. Be sure and come back after that next ruling for an update. We'll look forward to it.
Will do, Brian. Thank you.
All right. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
From weather and traffic reports
to news of political developments,
we turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world provide news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
Too many journalists are paying with their lives.
They face exponential risks, and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats, online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I am naked at the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre, surtout que je m'y attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced.
Press freedom is your freedom.
Kids Cancer Project funds vital research into childhood cancers. And you fund the Kids Cancer Project. Funding research means giving children back their lives. And who knows what kids with cancer could grow up to do? The Kids Cancer Project. Survival starts with science. Donate now.
The Kids Cancer Project.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McLean and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
Advertising has always leveraged the psychology of persuasion. But when does persuasion cross the line into indoctrination? The vast majority of people in adverts these days are excruciatingly and precisely diverse. Traditional nuclear families are rare, and white families virtually extinct. Beyond that, advertisements across the spectrum of products, from dog food to diapers, have become bland, boring, and banal. Has DEI killed clever advertising? Here to discuss is a classical musician and filmmaker who found himself in the advertising world, Chris Shimajima. You can find him on the gram at C-S-H-I-M-O and check out his website, chrisshimajima.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-S-H-I-M-O-J-I-M-A.com. Chris, welcome to State of the Nation.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So what are you seeing as a filmmaker with experience in advertising? What are you seeing going on?
Well, really, I'll just preface it by saying, I was never really sort of awakened to all this. If you'd asked me like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I was very kind of closed off. I wouldn't say I was especially political, still not necessarily. But it was probably in that time frame, especially when COVID hit, that I started to feel alienated by a lot of the ideologies that were getting pushed, especially, working in advertising and film. You have everyone jumping in on the latest thing, to talk about and the latest latest trends to get into. And I was really starting to feel like it wasn't how I was feeling. And the more that this kind of culture war just pushed into the arts and into my daily life, I mean, I'm a very active person. So when they closed down the gyms around me, that's when I was like, okay, hold on a sec. Let's take a break here. Let's think about this. I need to get back to the gym. I need to get back into the pool. I'm an avid swimmer. I need to swim. There's nothing wrong with swimming. That's when I really started to question a lot of everything. And luckily I have a few friends who would kind of fill me in on all these details and start really, really helping me think in different ways about a lot of it. And I guess what's unique here is that, as a filmmaker, you don't really find a lot of fiction stories that deal with this kind of topic or deal with things from this perspective. Everything is very much from the typical establishment themes, everything from, what's the latest DEI push to talking about climate catastrophe stuff to pushing plant-based stuff. It's always hitting those same things. I mean, you scroll through Netflix, there's so many, documentaries or even fiction things that are constantly talking about those things. So you rarely hear of good fiction storytelling that's trying to question those ideologies and tell things from the other side. So that's where I saw an opening.
Yeah, it was definitely an open goal, I mean, these I feel like before 2020 or somewhere thereabouts, we had things like they would explore these things in science fiction a little bit, right? Like we talk a lot about Black Mirror, things like that. Oh, yeah. Like in that setting, it seemed to be okay because it's just distant enough in the future and just absurd enough that like, okay, I could. But then 2020 comes along and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, social credit scores are really going to be a thing and not personal ownership's not going to be a thing. And my right to travel and, skateboard and swim that they filled the swimming pool and the skate park with sand. Like what's happening here? So, what I like about what you did is you took your skill set and you flipped it against this. I was watching some of your stuff this morning. And, I love that you're out there against the COVID scam, and so you mentioned the 2020 that once that happened and they told you, you can't go to the gym anymore, you can go protest
that was the trigger. That was the later, trigger.
Burn stuff down, but you can't, go to the skate park. That really must've lit a fire under you.
Yeah, totally. And what you said about Black Mirror and all that stuff, it hits very close to home. Cause I was always a Black Mirror fan. I've always said that this project is kind of, it's 1984, but today. And right. I mean that in a very specific way, because there is a new version of 1984 that's just been adapted and released. It's starring Andrew Garfield, I think, on Audible. And it's obviously very much metaphorical, and they're not bringing it close to reality. So they're staying in that 1984 dystopian world. And what I really wanted to do was take that, but set it in our actual world, because that's how you make it much more relevant to people. And that's how you keep people from just kind of pushing it away as just another sci-fi dystopian story. I would not call this dystopian. I think it's just a satire of the current world. Like it's very much, the things that are in it are everything that we're dealing with, just heightened slightly to make the jokes and the satire more prominent.
Yeah, and we're talking about Journey to Tomorrow, which is an 11-part series on Chris's Safe Society podcast.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah,
I love it because it's satire, horror, and thriller all mashed up. So yeah, it's a heightened reality, right?
Yeah. So the Journey to Tomorrow you mentioned is sort of like a podcast within the podcast of the thing. And it's presented by this narrator who's very much like your typical NPR kind of host. And she has, you know, her whole set of ideologies. And what happens is as the series progresses, you kind of see the inklings that this narrator is very much biased and is basically the demonic force that is in control of the establishment and is, you know, basically brainwashing the elites who are then brainwashing everyone else. So that's where these ideas of mass indoctrination and mass psychosis really come in. The satire is because it is basically taking those things, elevating it a little bit, making fun of it. And the horror elements, the thriller elements, those were not difficult to come by because it's very, it kind of already felt that way to me. So it's almost just a natural stepping stone to go to the horror. And I just put in those little horror elements like demonic possession, cult rituals, all those kind of things to really just milk the absurdities that already exist.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. They are a description of our reality. You know, we talk about the COVIDian cult a lot, and there's so many sacraments involved in the COVIDian cult, right? Like stay home. Yep. Don't go to a birth or a funeral. Skip all the weddings. The ritual muzzle of shame. One of the most, the pinnacle of their sacraments. These sacrosanct ideas. And then, of course, there was the asymptomatic spreader. The loss of natural immunity. I mean, it was a veritable horror show. And then, of course, the products came out, and then they started, polarizing us about, take the product, and if you don't, then you're clearly an awful grandma-killing person.
Well, COVID was the perfect scenario to really start pushing all this to a heightened level because it just enabled them to kind of push that fear button on all of us. I mean, like I was there at the beginning too. Like I was there, tuning in to CNN, and I was like, "Oh shit! Oh my god! This stuff is crazy. What am I going to do about it?" And so, if you are a person that is easily, who's listening to the media all the time and is easily, pushed by fear and everything, it's very easy to get sidetracked and pushed down that path. So I sympathize, and I have a lot of contacts who are still, who still refuse to see things another way. I understand it.
I love movies like Wes Anderson's The Grand Budapest Hotel and dark indie comedies. I remember one from the Boston Film Festival back in the late 80s, Guilty as Charged, about a guy who captures people that have been let off on technicalities, and he holds a trial and he owns his own electric chair. And you can do the math. And then movies like Delicatessen, right? Post-World War II Germany. And all of a sudden, residents in the apartment building that has a delicatessen on the first floor go missing one by one. Coincidentally, just as there's a delivery of meat. So sometimes this dark vein can be mined for some real gold. Can we expect some things from you in this genre?
Well, first of all, you have great taste. I appreciate all those that you mentioned. I think what's unique that's coming from me is that I do come from that more sophisticated advertising filmmaking vein. I'm a New York independent filmmaker type. So I have all those like inspirations in the back of me. Like I I like Kubrick films. I like Scorsese films. I like foreign Ingmar Bergman films, Cassavetes films, all that. So what I'm trying to do with this project specifically is bring that kind of style and edginess to this genre and this type of perspective and this type of these type of themes versus, for example, like you, if you look at what the Daily Wire is doing, you know, they're putting out films, but those are more in like the B movie genre filmmaking type. So I'm trying to do something a little bit different in that I'm not really preaching to the choir. I'm trying to reach like the elite sophisticated people that it's also kind of provoking and criticizing at the same time.
Yeah. And the horror, sort of like maybe stimulating them to think, right?
Yeah. Well, it's proven to be a difficult just by, you know, already communicating with some reviewers. But it's a process that I'm trying to keep going. Different projects that I have going down the road are also in this satirical vein, tackling them from different angles. You know, one's more focused on social media and the push of like cultish kind of religious behavior in that. So satire has always been close to my heart and something that I do want to continue.
We need lots of it. We need lots of it right now because the mainstream, you know, Hollywood productions are just really falling off
the map.
Most people are not interested in another Marvel movie. Although I did see the Iron Man 4 trailer and I'm a little curious. All right, I'll admit, but I mean, just an overdose.
Wait a second, there's an Iron Man 4 now?
Yeah, they're working on it. They just put the teaser out. Yeah, it looks interesting. But I mean, overall,
But Iron Man has different parts put on, so he's identifying as Iron Girl.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was gonna say, because Robert Downey's gone. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, the satire is so important because everything else has just been saturated with just this milquetoast, you know, redoing the same thing over and over again. But my question I'm thinking about, you know, for you and your career, I've seen a number of my friends and colleagues who are in film and do things, you know, similar work to you. They've found that they become persona non grata for taking up some of these topics. They're not getting calls from some of the larger studios that they may have worked with in the past. Are you concerned about that? Are you experiencing that? Or do you think the fact that you're working largely in satire, although it be very sharp satire, might, you know, are you going to be viable in the mainstream system anymore, or are you going to
listen?
Be,
so, so it's something I've definitely thought about a lot. You know, before, as I was brainstorming this project and then writing it and deciding putting it out there, so I've had a lot of time to kind of come to terms with it and get comfortable with any repercussions or any potential fallout that might happen. I do think that. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, I you know, when dealing with my independent film crowd or advertising crowd, it's something that they're not necessarily interested in to begin with. So they're not really going to kind of bridge that gap and try to pay attention to it as much that would cause them to be have a heart attack from it or anything like that. So far it's been fine. It's also a situation where, you know, I'm very much working in the independent scene. So, you know, if you were to ask me to like, oh, you know, am I afraid to put something up in front of Warner Brothers or Disney, then totally. I think that's a different story. But because, you know, the indie film scene is much more DIY. And also the reason why I decided to do an audio drama is because it's much more cost effective to tell your story that way. You have a lot more in your control. And there's a lot less at stake in terms of pleasing other people.
Well, if you want a couple of unpaid industry consultants for your social media, I think Brian and I would love to volunteer our services. In fact, Brian, I think you've already come up with the perfect title for this project, Doom Scroll.
Great.
There you go.
No, that's great, guys.
Chris, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much. Very interesting conversation. It's Journey to Tomorrow on the Safe Society podcast, 11 parts. Make sure you check it out. It's well worth your time. Check out Chris at C Shimo, S-H-I-M-O, on the gram, and go to his website, Chris Shimajima. Chris, thanks so much. Stay tuned right here on today's news talk for the Jason Burmis Show. Until next time, for Brian Hesher McLean, I'm Timothy Shea. God bless you. God bless these United States. Keep fighting the good fight.